Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome into another edition of Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with you to talk about your 15th-ranked Marquette Golden Eagles. That's in the AP poll, number 15, which is, oddly enough, the same number of points that Wisconsin scored in the first half against Maryland. You know, I hesitate to say that, Phil, because we're actually recording this podcast, like, during that Wisconsin-Maryland game, so I fully realize that I could be jinxing it and Wisconsin could come back to win. So you could blame me on that one if that happens, but that doesn't change the fact they scored 15 points and a half of basketball.
Yeah, that would be a hell of a comeback for Wisconsin, but nobody's here for us, our hot Wisconsin
takes.
Yeah,
we're here to talk about
takes.
Good offensive basketball teams, but hey, you know, it would be nice if Wisconsin won because it would help the old strength of schedule.
That would be nice.
Good wins on the schedule, but Marquette's had a couple wins, nice wins this past week. We're going to talk about the wins over Creighton, Seton Hall. Maybe continue to gush over how incredible Marcus Howard is, and look ahead to the games this week. Most of you are probably listening to this podcast on Tuesday, so we'll talk about the game against Georgetown and then look ahead to Sunday against Providence, when, of course, there'll be a special guest in the house. But let's first talk about the last couple games, Phil. Creighton and Seton Hall, and you know, even though it's two games ago, I still feel like Marquette stole something getting that Creighton win, and but it's really important. It was an important win because it's the beginning of a nice stretch where there's a lot of winnable games, here for Marquette.
Yeah, I mean, it could be the start of a, you know, theoretically the schedule shakes out way anyway to be, you know, like 6-0, you know, 6-1 in conference after the next 2 weeks. But it was the other thing that's nice about it was there was a little bit of a narrative shaping up that Marquette couldn't win on the road, right? And early in that first half of that Creighton game, Creighton jumped out to a double-digit lead several times, and you kind of had the sense of, boy, here we go again. We just can't, you know, we can't even keep it competitive on the road. What's going on? And then the second half happened, and then the greatest blood pressure check of the last, well, probably three seasons occurred. And it was just crazy. It was just a crazy ending to that regulation.
Yeah, I don't know if it was so much a blood pressure check because I had already accepted defeat. You know, like I was like, well, all right, Marquette lost. I'm like, oh, well, maybe they haven't lost yet. And then, holy crap, Sam hit a shot that honestly probably shouldn't have counted, but whatever, I'll take it. You know, I'm not gonna throw it back. But yeah, that was just a wild game. Just a weird thing happened, and yeah. I mean, maybe Marquette didn't deserve to win that game just because, but you know, Creighton did make a terrible mistake at the end, and sometimes you have to pay for terrible mistakes, and that's what happened.
Well, it was just a crazy that Sam Hauser three for it was kind of a real chaos theory. It was kind of one of these a butterfly flaps its wings in China and it rains in Brazil. I think I reversed that, but that's okay.
We'll allow it.
But because if you think about it, like the ball had to get thrown long, untouched. Before that, Chartouni went up for a layup with like 1.5 left, missed it, got his own rebound, got the layup in to cut it to three, but with 0.8 seconds left, so it was kind of the right amount of time for Creighton to not sure whether to inbound it and just touch it or to throw it long. You know, and then obviously no one could touch that ball, and it went out of bounds all the way at the other end of the court without being touched. So that means it goes back under the hoop. And then, you know, it was just a crazy set of circumstances that enabled that Hauser shot. And then, you know, to your point, probably shouldn't have been allowed. I think that was one where we just got lucky that the officials on the court called it our way. Because clearly if they had called it the other way and said it was no good, there was nothing that was going to overturn it. So, you know, I'm going to take my money and run on that one for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, I think Marquette's odds of winning were down to 0.1 at that point. So
yeah, it's the
we like actually saw what a, you know, 1 in 1,000 chance of winning look like. Like what exactly has to happen. And, you know, the point you made, like a lesson in playing to the end. You know, Chartouni, like, he missed that one layup and he just goes back up for the other one. After missing that first one, it would have been totally understandable or natural for him to just say, ah, screw it. we lost, and walk off the court. But he grabbed the rebound and threw it back up, right? And
right.
If he doesn't do that, the game that never happens. Marquette loses by 5. And right. A lot of people cover who had Creighton minus 3.
Well, and Creighton did get a backdoor cover at the end of overtime, so some gamblers.
No, Creighton did cover. Creighton was favored.
Right. Oh, yeah, you're right. Creighton
was like,
favored.
So people who had Creighton minus 3 lost altogether.
Yep, that's
with,
true.
With literally 1 second left, they had a cover, and then they just lost entirely. Like, they could have been – I don't know if that ran on Scott Van Pelt's bad beats, but it should have been. Should have, because that is just a horrific beat. But.
You may have a gambling problem, though, if the Creighton-Marquette game, that last-second shot swung like your financial statement for the year.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't be betting that much money on really any sport, but particularly college basketball.
Right.
That was pretty hilarious to me. There were quite a few bad beats that day in college hoops. But let's not overlook the fact that Marcus Howard went bananas again and had another 53 points and is now – he is in national conversations as far as best players in college basketball. National Player of the Year probably not happening, but it's still a long ways to go there. Zion Williamson appears to be running away with it. But – he's in the discussion. He's on national podcasts, national, articles, shows, whatever, people talking about potential All-Americans and players to watch. You know, it's not just, the locals like us who were just hyping him up as an All-American candidate. The fact that, people unprompted in the national media are considering Howard as a National Player of the Year candidate, All-American candidate. I mean, he's getting there and he's getting a lot of attention.
Yeah, well, and that's the crazy thing about the Sam Hauser shot. If he doesn't make it, not only does Marquette not win, but Marquette gets denied another, like, just whole other level of Marcus Howard, because he scored 14 in overtime, like you said, to get 53, which not only beats his record of 52, but that 53 means going back to, like, it's not new Big East, it's not, the current Big East, it's any Big East player, period, going back to the inception of the league, Marcus Howard has the record.
We're talking Carmelo Anthony, Allen Iverson, Patrick Ewing, Chris Mullin, all these great scorers, Kemba Walker, all these great scorers we've seen in the league, none of them have had 53 points in a game, even in overtime, multiple overtimes, whatever.
Right. So, I mean, just to be able, like, I don't know, it's just weird to be able to say, we were super lucky not only that we won, but that we got to witness that kind of game. I mean, it was still a great game for Marcus, even if he didn't score. I mean, he would have had 39 points in regulation, right? That's not a nothing burger.
That's an outstanding game, but that doesn't get you leading SportsCenter.
Right, exactly. So, it was a great game, and the whole, well, maybe the shot shouldn't have counted, the officiating was classic Big East officiating all game, which I mean generally terrible in both directions. Because there were some calls in overtime where, I mean, talk about, kind of heart attacks. Creighton never went away. Even when Marquette went up 6 in overtime, Creighton came storming back. There were some questionable calls. Jamal Cain may have had one of Creighton's players up on assault charges at one point on the sideline pass that got knocked out of his hands with no foul called. But that was just a gutty performance by the team to stay close, get the tie, and then not only get the lead in overtime, but kind of gut it out and fight Creighton off. I think
exactly right. Yeah, that's the thing about the fact that yes, both things can be true, that Marquette did not deserve to win and that the team busted their asses, fought hard to deserve it, right? Because the team did play their asses off, and like I said, they fought to the very end. And yeah, maybe a couple calls at the, especially Sam Hauser's shot, went their way when it probably shouldn't have. But that doesn't take away from the effort in that game, and the effort was outstanding. And they finally got a road win, kind of, like you said, kind of canceled that narrative that this team can't win road games. And they just essentially dominated overtime. Creighton just kind of got it close towards the end. Marquette did not lead for a single second of regulation, and they led for pretty much all of overtime.
That just blows my mind.
Just wild. Then they kind of parlay that and then get another win at home against Seton Hall on Saturday, and that was a game that really you didn't get a ton from Marcus Howard. I think Seton Hall did a pretty good job limiting Howard, especially in the second half of that game. But the contributions from everybody else, especially Theo John, Sakar had a great game as well. I mean, that kind of shows you the other side of it, Phil, that it's nice to know that Marcus Howard doesn't have to go for 40 for Marquette to beat good teams.
Yeah, well, it was kind of funny because it was both sides of the coin in the same game because, you know, you and I were texting during the game as we're wont to do and, you know, kind of made mention that, you know, hey, Marcus Howard's been kind of limited by Seton Hall. And I happened to glance up at the stat line and he was, I think at that point it was late in the game and it was like, you know, he had 26 points, 6 assists and 6 rebounds. And I was like, well, if that's a limited Marcus Howard, I will take it. But you're right. I mean, he only scored 8 points in the second half, so Seton Hall did their best to really shut him down. But to your ultimate point, that is that's the thing that's got me the most optimistic about this team is all sorts of different players can step up, and Marquette can win all sorts of different ways, right? Like you had Creighton, which was a high scoring affair. Even without overtime, it was a very high scoring affair that Marquette was able to keep up offensively with. Versus the Seton Hall game, which was much more of a grinded out kind of defensive, get stops, feed the offense type of game. So Marquette's got a lot of flexibility that really I think will be beneficial. Especially come postseason, but in the grinding of the Big East, you just got to get wins, man.
Yeah, they certainly did that. A lot of minutes from Theo John, which is great, partly out of necessity because Ed Morrow went down with an injury in that game. I guess the news on Monday was not terrible news. He's listed as questionable for the Georgetown game on Tuesday, which is better than the worst, what people were expecting, that he may have suffered an injury that would cause him to miss some extended amount of time, if not the rest of the season. So if he's questionable for Georgetown, you would think that he's going to be back at some point this season, maybe not this week. But that, I guess that was that's what I took away from the announcement on Monday, Phil.
He can't be ruled out for the season at this point. So, I mean, that's... it's not a bad thing that he's questionable per se. I mean, obviously you'd want him to be, you know, yeah, he's perfectly fine. But, you know, when you miss the entire second half and aren't even on the bench, I'm going to assume something's up. And so him being questionable is probably about the best we can ask for right now.
Yeah, so if you got to go a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks with more minutes for Matt Helt and maybe go a little smaller with the Housers up front, I think you can live with that. When Theo John can't be out there, but more minutes from Theo John, as long as he's staying out of foul trouble, is just fine with me because he is really emerging as just such a key figure in Marquette's wins because of what he brings defensively, a rim protector unlike really any Marquette's had, I don't know, in the last decade, maybe longer.
I can't remember the last real – what was it, Robert Jackson? I mean, who would we say was
– I mean, was Robert Jackson really a shot blocker, though? I mean, he was a big guy and a key and such a necessary player, very good rebounder for a Final Four team. But I don't know, maybe I'm just misremembering. I don't remember Jackson being a shot blocker or an intimidating presence like John is. Maybe I just don't remember.
I'm just reaching, trying to I don't know.
We have to go all the way back to McIlvain in the 80s.
Yeah, I mean Usman Barrel wasn't like. I don't know. He wasn't like a big shot blocker, but
right.
I don't know. Theo is a presence. I mean, that's one of the things. I don't know if you caught it during the Creighton game. At the end of the game, I can't remember if it was in overtime or at the end of regulation when they kind of went into the huddle with Creighton and Doug McDermott's like, listen, don't even go in, like, don't challenge that guy. Just, you know, get it in the lane and then distribute from there. Like, he was absolutely game planning around game planning for avoiding Theo John in the post on defense. And that is something we have not had in a long time, and it's really fun.
At least not since Hughes and Bow.
Yeah, those 30 seconds were a hell of a post presence.
Yeah, I mean he could just reach up and touch the rim without even moving.
That way he was vastly underutilized.
But no, just the John's ever evolving game, and as a shot blocker, as a rebounder, and being able to limit the fouls trouble that really plagued him as a freshman. And it's still there. His foul rate is still not great by any stretch, but for a big guy, I guess it's improving. What's his fouls per 40 right now? His fouls per 40 is, I mean, it's 7.7, so he's still fouling at a pretty good rate, but he's still working on it. But
yeah, but I mean, he's only
in the game against Seton Hall.
I mean, it's kind of feast or famine, right? Like he's either, I will say this. I try and avoid the complaining about officiating, but I think Theo John gets some calls unfairly his way just because he exists, you know, like he is just that much. It's like hitting iron.
Much stronger than just about anybody he goes up against. If you bump into him, he's going to knock you over.
Right. Right. And so I think he gets some unfair calls, but I think he's, it's kind of feast or famine. Either he's getting one, two, maybe three fouls in a game and is being competitive. And sometimes he just picks up two or three fouls in a half and that's it for the night. So it really just kind of depends on how tightly the post they're calling the game. I think that's where Theo has some work to do yet in kind of figuring out how to assess the officiating and what's going on and how to adjust accordingly. Cause he kind of really has only one speed and that's kill.
And I'm fine with that.
I'd love it. One thing I want to circle back to on Marcus that we didn't highlight. He is absolutely, I wouldn't say it's probable, but he is in realistic range of setting the all-time scoring record for a Marquette player as a junior. Right now, if you assume three postseason games, all he has to do is average 26 points a game, which sounds like a lot, but he scored 26 or more in like all but two of the last 12 games he's played.
Well, he's averaging 25.8 on the season, so averaging 26 is really not a stretch.
Correct, right.
And you say three postseason games, to be clear, that's combination Big East tournament and any postseason tournament.
Correct. So
hypothetically, if Marquette plays two games in the Big East tournament and then plays one game in the NCAA tournament, that would qualify. But say, like, if you win the Big East tournament and if you can get to the Sweet 16, then then the number goes down.
Right, exactly. Yep, that's exactly right.
So it's attainable this year, which is significant, especially as he passes, if he would be able to pass George Thompson, who was the previous record holder, and he did his in 3 years because he didn't play as a freshman, of course. Freshman didn't play back then. And then, of course, McNeil, he played 4 years. But still, if he's able to break McNeil's scoring record in 3 years, that would be wowzers.
Yeah. So it's definitely, I mean, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I mean, if he gets another 45 point game or two, it's starting to look real, real likely. So that would be
exactly. He doesn't exactly have to go for 26 every single night. When you blow up for 40 or 50 every seems like he's doing that, getting in the 40s every, I don't know, four or five games or so, something like that tends to happen.
Yeah,
so if you keep
doing
that, you could survive a few nights when you score, 18 or so.
So if you're DePaul, you should be real ready for Marcus to go way off, huh?
Hopefully.
Yeah, that would be great.
Hopefully. For what it's worth, I've probably mentioned on the podcast a few times, I work with a guy who is a big-time Georgetown fan.
Yes,
and he's,
correct.
He is a very pessimistic Georgetown fan, at least these days. And he has assured me that Marcus Howard will set a career high on Tuesday night.
You got to be kidding me. I mean, I'd love it.
So take that from the world's most pessimistic Georgetown fan, but that was his prediction.
So he's predicting at least 54 points, which, I mean.
Yes.
Okay. And if that happens, that would be great because then he's definitely setting the single or the career points record. At Marquette.
All right, so that's the on-the-record prediction. But let's actually dive into Georgetown a little bit more than that, just not taking the opinion of the world's most pessimistic Georgetown fan. You know, the Hoyas currently sit 12-5 on the season. They've lost two games in the Big East. 2-2 in the Big East as they enter this game. They've lost at home to St. John's in overtime. And then they had a rough one on the road against Xavier. They've defeated Butler and Providence. I mean, look at some of the numbers. You know, some of the things that kind of jump out to me. I mean, they're okay defending the three-point arc. I mean, they're... but not great. They're 108 in the country. Opponents are shooting... defending three-point arc. Actually, not great. They're 170 in the country. Opponents shooting 33%. They shoot it at 35% from three, so not great. There's really not a whole lot of numbers that really jump out to me as far as numbers that are noticeably terrible or noticeably great. I guess the thing that maybe is that they're pretty good on the defensive glass, only allowing opponents at 24.5% of their offensive rebounds, which, you know, compared to Marquette, Marquette's even better than that. Marquette's in the top 10 in the country as far as defensive rebounding. Their offensive rebounding has slipped a little bit, but still not bad. On the Georgetown side, they're also they don't really force many turnovers, which is good. So that would play hopefully into a strength of Marquette, because Marquette still kicks the ball around a little bit.
Yeah, that was a real problem against Seton Hall.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Yeah, that was a real problem against Seton Hall, continuing to boot the ball around.
When you look at the matchup with the Hoyas, Phil, anything jump out at you?
I think Georgetown is the ultimate kind of blah team in the NCAA, right? Like they don't do anything.
They're just there. They're not terrible. They're not good. They're just .
Yeah, and I think they could beat Marquette. I think just about any team in the Big East could beat Marquette on any given night, right? But I think they're more of a traditional style of basketball, right? They've got Govan. They're gonna be much more post oriented, which makes sense given their coach. I think they're just kind of a plodding, slow kind of team that theoretically kind of fits right into the type of style that Marquette would love to beat. I mean, Marquette doesn't want to necessarily go fast. They're looking to have work against a half-court offense on the defensive end and kind of have a team that's not necessarily strong around the three-point arc. So I think matchup-wise, this is a favorable matchup for Marquette. But coming off of two tight games, the emotional roller coaster of the Creighton game and then the Seton Hall game was no gimme, right? I mean, they let them back in and tried to lose that game late. Going on the road a couple of days later, that makes for a tough matchup. What do you think?
Yeah. You know, when I was doing the preseason predictions, I just kind of picked this as a game just because you play crappy on the road sometimes. So I just kind of picked this one randomly. So, yeah, it could absolutely happen because, you know, Jesse Govan's a tough matchup because he is 6'10", and he's actually not bad from three. He's shooting 42% from three this season. He doesn't shoot a lot, but he'll take a few every game, so he can always stretch the defense. I wonder if he's going to maybe hang around the three-point arc and try to keep John out there, and that would allow guys to maybe drive to the basket a little more confidently if John is a little further away trying to guard against Govan, or how would Marquette counteract that? Would they put one of the Housers on Govan if he's going to hang out around the three-point arc and tell, you know, Theo to just, you know, camp out in the lane, you know, guard whoever's close to the basket.
Who comes near you. If you see a ball, get it.
Yeah. If you see a guy, guard him. But really, you know, the reason for optimism is if you're a Hoyas fan is, you know, they have some pretty exciting freshmen, Akinjo, and, you know, Matt McClung is almost more of a YouTube Instagram sensation, but he's actually been pretty good. He doesn't shoot it very well, but, you know, this little 6'2 white dude who can really throw it down. I mean, the fans get excited when he's able to get some baskets, and especially if he's able to dunk on somebody. So, but, you know, McClung does play tough. He had that great buzzer beater against Providence on Saturday that sent it into overtime that kind of helped the Hoyas survive. So, you know, the freshmen are always capable. You know, they're a little unpredictable, but, you know, they're certainly capable of having big games and kind of surprising Marquette. But I certainly like Marquette's guards against their guards, both on an experience and talent level. So it's just the X factor of how is Govan going to hurt you? Is he going to step outside and hit a few threes and maybe kind of take Theo John out of his element? And how would Marquette counteract that would be my question.
Right. And well, and the question we brought up, Theo John's foul rate, right? Like if Govan can get Theo into foul trouble, you know, certainly Matt Helt's there, and he's Matt Helt's performed well, decent enough against Govan in you know, previous encounters like say last year, but it's certainly going to be more, you know, it's going to be a negative impact if Theo's in foul trouble and we have to go to Matt a lot to get minutes. You know, Georgetown will be able to operate through Govan a little bit more, I would think, and maybe run a little bit more pick and roll than we're ordinarily allowing these days. So, yeah, I think it's going to come down to, you know, how many minutes can Theo John play and how well is Marquette shooting. They have a tendency to be a little bit streaky at times. You know, does Marcus go hero ball, which he has from time to time? I mean, if they're falling, they're falling, then, you know, by all means.
I am all for Marcus Howard hero ball because he is a hero. shoot as much as he wants.
He can go to hero ball as long as he's unlocked the cheat code that yeah. He has most of the time. You know, we don't need 26 points on you know, 6 of 26 shooting or something like that. But yeah, I think this is, of the four games coming up, this is probably the toughest road game, coming off of two back-to-back tight victories, emotional victories. I think this one is probably the toughest of them. I don't see any reason why Marquette won't win. They certainly could lose, but I think Marquette's got this against Georgetown.
Yeah, I feel pretty confident myself, even though it is a road game. Just the fact that they shook off the "we stink on the road" thing by beating Creighton. Georgetown is an inferior team. Let's just call it the way it is. I mean, they just haven't been that great this season, even though they are coming off a nice win over Providence. And it is a winnable road game, and Marquette is favored, according to KenPom, about a 3-point favorite at Georgetown. And kind of like you were saying, Phil, there is a kind of a stretch here of winnable games where Marquette can really get some momentum going and kind of maybe separate itself from the middle of the pack of the Big East a little bit and try to keep pace with Villanova, who, as we're recording this, is still undefeated in the Big East. So if you can survive this trip to Georgetown, then you come home against Providence, hopefully win that one. Then you got another home game against DePaul. You damn sure better win that one. And then if you've got some momentum and confidence going, hopefully you can go on the road and beat Xavier. And then maybe it gets a little tougher as you go on the road against Butler. You got a rematch with St. John's and Villanova, but all those games are at home. You know, for what it's worth, going game by game, KenPom has Marquette winning, was 10 of its next 11?
Yeah. Yeah. And only losing three the rest
of
the way.
Nine of its next 10. But still, I mean, there's a stretch here for Marquette. I mean, that seems overly optimistic, but, I mean, going game by game by KenPom, that's kind of what they have. Of Marquette's next 10 games, the only loss prediction, according to KenPom, is on the road at Butler on January 30th. So there is certainly an opportunity for Marquette to really get some momentum here and start to separate itself, and then maybe we can start talking about a two-horse race for the Big East Championship between Marquette and Villanova.
Well, I mean, I think it's time to start thinking of and again, this is always, anytime I get super optimistic, this is where it comes back.
Yeah, that's when it comes crashing down to earth, right?
Yeah, but I mean, you know, the fact that they've gone 3-1 to start the conference season, like if you think back to last year where we kept trying to convince ourselves, oh, this team's pretty good, it would be two steps forward, one step back kind of thing, right? Like so last year's team would have absolutely have lost that Creighton game, but then turned around and maybe won Seton Hall and Georgetown, but then lost Providence. I think, you know, this team is got a different mental makeup. It's got, you know, there's been some outstanding coaching from Wojo the last, you know, especially in conference season, St. John's aside, right? The play calls out of timeouts, the overall adjustments and that sort of thing.
You know, I think as Paint Touch has pointed out on numerous occasions, but particularly Saturday, his out of timeout plays are pretty good.
Yeah.
Like the points per possession are pretty solid. And I think at several moments on Saturday when the offense was a little stagnant in the second half. He called a timeout, and they got a bucket. And I think that was the case towards the end of regulation as well, when they were just struggling trying to get something. And I guess was there a timeout before Hauser shot or not? I kept trying.
Yeah, there was. There was. Yeah. Okay, so Hauser's drive down the lane.
I don't know if you call that a timeout play or just saying, hey, throw it up to the tall guy and let him shoot. But still, whatever you want to call it, Marquette tends to really know what it's doing when Wojo's able to draw up something.
Yeah. So I think we've answered some questions we had about coaching, right? Certainly around the defensive numbers.
It's becoming more clear for sure.
Right. So all of that to say, I think this game, I think it'll be, you know, it may be tough, you know, I don't think it's going to be a walk away laugher kind of game, but I think Marquette comes away with the win against Georgetown.
I feel the same way. And I hope my coworker is right. Marquette and Marcus Howard goes for 54 points, not in overtime.
My God. No. Let's get that in regulation.
Yeah, you know, I would settle for not a career. I would settle for a career high in regulation. So what would that be? 47?
47. Yep.
Yeah. So I'd settle for that. Win in regulation, blow them out. But I think it'll be tougher than that. I'll say to 79-74.
Okay. All right. Yep. I was going to go something like 68-61. Good guys.
All right. And hopefully Matt McClung doesn't dunk on anybody.
Oh, that would be great.
But honestly, if he does, I might enjoy it. You know, I might just like, you know, it sucks to happen to our guys, but it was kind of cool.
Yeah. Anyway, hey, listen, Giannis has been dunked on. So, you know, that's.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you can survive it. You can move on from it and kind of say, hey, good play. Nice job. Let's talk a little bit about Sunday. As much about the game as we will talk about the guest. Of course, it is Dwayne Wade Day, a chance to honor Wade. Of course, he is retiring from the NBA. This will be his last NBA season. Really hard to dispute that he's the best basketball player Marquette has ever produced, certainly as we're talking NBA players.
Yep.
I don't know what else to say. I don't know if I want to go on a deep dive into what everything Wade has meant to Marquette. But, Phil, I will say with what Marcus Howard is doing right now and as he as we talk about his place in Marquette lore, it still seems as great as he's been, he still has a long way to go to get to Wade, at least in my mind, as far as what a dominant player Wade was and just the recognition he brought to the program, considering where the program was when he came to it. But I'm looking forward to seeing what you know, Marquette has in store for Dwayne Wade's celebration on Sunday.
Yeah, that's going to be a really interesting atmosphere. And you're right. Like, I mean, Dwayne Wade, it's not just the basketball talent. Because, I mean, let's be fair. We only truly had 2 years of Dwayne Wade, right? He was a Prop 48 qualifier or whatever that
yeah,
used
wasn't
to
able
be.
To play as a freshman, so what, sophomore, yep. Junior year.
Yeah, yep. So he only played two seasons, right? And we were there when in his first season they went out in a heartbreaker against Tulsa in the opening round of the NCAA tournament. So, like, from sustained championship-type success, it was the one season, right? The Final Four season, obviously, and the Kentucky game.
I would say, though, it was the feel of two seasons, because obviously the season before he played, Marquette was an NIT team. And right. Really just the fact of, like, Marquette making the tournament, it had been a while. You know, it had been a few years. And it's like Marquette was such an unathletic, unentertaining team before Crean and Wade showed up. And just the fact that Marquette was in the tournament was just such a new feeling at the time. Especially for a recent fan who really just started, like myself, who just really started following Marquette when I enrolled as a freshman. But he just kind of changed the perspective of the perception of the program as a sophomore and just got Marquette into the tournament. But as far as truly exploding, yeah, it was all about that junior season when he was a first-team All-American. He was in the discussion for National Player of the Year. T.J. Ford won it, but I think, you know, Wade was one of the top two or three candidates to win it that year. Along with, I guess, Carmelo Anthony, but and then, you know, of course, Wade had that historic triple double in the Elite Eight over Kentucky and got Marquette to its third Final Four, and, you know, they haven't been back since. Came close once, but who's to say what else would have happened? But who knows if Dwayne Wade is never a thing at Marquette, and maybe the program stayed at Mike Dean levels, you know, through the early 2000s. Would Marquette have been an attractive option when the Big East wanted to expand? I don't know. Maybe.
Well,
not.
I mean, DePaul came.
DePaul did get invited, but like DePaul was obviously DePaul's been terrible since the Big East formed, but DePaul was not a joke in the early 2000s. Not necessarily. I mean, they weren't great, but yeah. I mean, DePaul did get invited, but you know, they're also in Chicago.
Yeah, that's true. But I think you're right. Kind of where I was going is that Dwayne Wade, like when you encompass everything in total, right? Like career at Marquette, what he meant at the time that he was at Marquette, as well as the NBA, kind of performance, and you know, he multiple rings, you know, first ballot Hall of Famer as a shooting guard. He is, you know, like every, you know, Marcus may end up from a basketball context just being a, you know, he's clearly going to be just a better pure scorer than Wade was at Marquette. But it, you know, there, it's just going to mean different things to different ways. And obviously I haven't seen a lot of pre, you know, 99 Marquette games. Obviously I've watched some of the 77 championship and semifinals and stuff, but that Kentucky game is the greatest Marquette player performance I've seen ever. Right. Like that.
It's
that
just like from the total experience, both ends of the floor, stuff in the stat sheet, taking over a game. Even Pat Riley, you know, he was there watching as a Kentucky guy, and he was just watching, just like, wow. And like that was the reason the Heat ended up taking him. Riley's like, I gotta have that guy.
Right. Right. Exactly. So I mean, I really hope they're gonna, you know, kind of. I think it's gonna be a crazy atmosphere, and it's gonna be great. It's actually kind of on a personal. It's gonna be. I'm gonna get a lot of Wade this season because. So not only is it that Providence game, but for a birthday present, my wife got me tickets to the Bucks Heat game in Milwaukee in March. It's one of Wade's last regular season games. So gonna go get to see Wade play and
yeah, I'm gonna try to catch him when he comes to Dallas in the middle of February myself.
Yeah, so I mean it's gonna be great, and I hopefully with that Providence game, I mean, you know, Providence isn't terrible. I'm a huge Ed Cooley fan, yeah. But they're struggling right now, and they're kind of, you know, bringing in a bunch of talent after they lost a bunch of talent. So Providence absolutely could beat Marquette, but I think that's a good matchup for, hopefully with all the energy that's in the stadium, to extend the winning streak at the Fiserv Forum.
Yeah, you can't be losing at home on Dwayne Wade Day.
No,
just can't do it. But yeah, I agree with you that, you know, this is certainly not Cooley's best team. That said, would not shock me if an Ed Cooley team gets it together and finds a way to get into the tournament, because I think that's what he's often does, even if it's, you know, he's just barely getting in or getting into the first four, or you know being an 11-12 seed, something like that. He tends to get his teams to play the way he wants and play at a high level by the time he gets to the end of the season. So even if Providence is not doing well now, maybe it's best you play Providence now, because as you get into late February and March, I bet Providence is going to be winning games in a team that nobody's really going to want to face. And yeah, they have some young players that are pretty good. He's recruited at a pretty good level, considering, you know, he's at Providence, which is not necessarily a national power, and there's plenty of good teams in that general area in the Northeast that he's competing with for recruits. But hey, obviously, you know, Alpha Diallo is going to be the guy you're going to want to watch out for. I mean, he's their top player, but some of the younger guys he's brought in recent years, like Makai Ashton Langford and David Duke, are both nice young players who are going to be contributing for him for a few years. And, you know, they're pretty tough in the middle. You know, they still have Khalif Young there. He was a guy Marquette, I remember Marquette was recruiting him
yep.
a while back, but he doesn't play a ton of minutes. Nate Watson plays most of their minutes in the middle, and they're pretty good shot blocking team. Their block percentage, well, actually, I take it back there. I'm looking at it opposite. They don't get a lot of shots blocked on offense, but they're a pretty good shot blocking team as well. They block 12.2%, so pretty good rate there. So it might be a bit of a battle in the paint for Theo and Matt Helt, and if he plays Ed Morrow. So it may be a little bit – that may be a grind as well. But, yeah, because, Phil, I think not Providence's strongest team, not exactly playing well at the moment. We'll see how they do against Seton Hall on Tuesday. But, yeah, when they come to Fiserv Forum on Sunday, you know, Marquette's going to be favored. KenPom has it as a 9-point spread for Marquette right now, for what it's worth. So, again, that should be a game Marquette wins. And with Wade in the house, hopefully it's a big crowd, and there's a lot of longtime Marquette fans, and by longtime I mean, you know, like 20 years or so at least, who remember the Wade days and long for those days of trying to get back to the Final Four. You know, those things are so rare at a school like Marquette. Who knows when Marquette goes back? Hopefully it's soon, but you never know. But it'll be nice maybe to kind of look back on some of the memories and some of the best performances from Wade. I'm sure they'll probably have a cool montage video of some of his biggest moments and biggest games. Obviously, that Kentucky game is going to be in it. The two home games against Cincinnati will probably be in there as well. But, yeah, so many good memories from Wade, and I'm looking forward to seeing what Marquette does for him on Sunday.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a good game. Out of curiosity for the game itself, who do you think from Marquette guards Alpha Diallo?
I guess one of the Housers.
Yeah, that's what I was. Is it
going
to
have
like,
to be right? I mean, if he's playing the 3-4, you know, that's where the Housers are more often than not. So those are going to be the guys you're. I mean, they've got the size to match up with them. Now, are they going to be quick enough to keep up with them? I don't know.
Yeah, that's going to be the only kind of real matchup quandary I have is do you put Sam on him and maybe you run, you know, some combination of Sam, Jamal Kane, maybe Brendan.
Good to see
Bailey.
Kane getting a few more minutes and like making the most of it. It's not like he's scoring a bunch. I mean, he doesn't really need to, but there was a brief spell there in December. People are wondering about Kane and why he's never on the floor, but he's getting in there and he can, at the very least, get in there and get you a few rebounds. And I think Kane is kind of, you know, carving out a role for himself now, and, you know, there'll probably be more minutes available, and they may need more scoring from him as the years go by here. But I'm glad to see Kane kind of, you know, carving out a little bit more of a role for himself.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think he's kind of carving out a little bit of a mini Trent Lockett kind of niche, right? Where he's trying to be a lockdown defender, and he's grabbing boards and kind of doing little things. He's not trying to score a lot and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I think it's good to see him working his way back in, and quite honestly, the way Wojo's handled the roster, you know, I don't want to praise Wojo like he's the second coming of, you know, some sort of John Wooden or something. But I think he's done a good job of handling the roster, managing the players that are out there, managing the matchups. And, you know, I think that's, you know, bodes well through the rest of the season. I don't think that kind of thing disappears or is somehow luck, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think Wojo finally has the team that he wants from top to bottom as far as depth, experience, scoring, post presence, shot blocking, defensive ability. I think for the first time he kind of has pretty much everything he's wanted out of a team. Whereas the first 4 years you could always say something was missing, whether it was experience, whether it was scores early on. Like that first year he really didn't have anybody who could score. The past few years he hasn't had defense. I think this is the first team that Wojo probably looks at his roster and says, for the most part, I've got everything I need.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's accurate.
Yeah. So predicting two wins for this week, Phil?
Yeah, I'm going to go 2-0 this week.
Yeah, I'm hoping for 2-0 as well. And I'm hoping that stretches even further than that. Goes 4-0, 5-0, not 4, not 5. But we'll see. Hopefully we can get a little winning streak here. And if it does, then maybe we can start getting confident that Marquette can't keep pace with Villanova, because I think Villanova's woken up. They're not going away. They're not going to hand over the Big East to anybody. So, going to have to keep pace with the Wildcats. And it'd be nice if when Villanova visits Marquette, I believe that is National Marquette Day, if I'm not mistaken.
That is, in fact, National Marquette Day.
Yeah, so that could, who knows, it'd be awesome if that's a battle for first place in the Big East. That'd be pretty
cool. That would be, again, talk about atmosphere. That would be crazy, but we've got, you know, like 7 games between now and then.
Yeah, a lot can go horribly wrong between now and then.
Yeah, correct. Absolutely.
Yeah. So hopefully nothing does go wrong. Hopefully Marquette gets a couple wins this week. So as always, we appreciate you listening in here on Scrambled Eggs. Hit us up on Twitter with your thoughts, your questions, your comments. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is M-O-O-O-F 23. You can hit the Cracked Sidewalks. That's the team handle. You can go to the Scrambled Eggs Facebook page. You can also be sure to go to cracksidewalks.com. We post the podcast there. Leave your comments. And don't forget to go to Apple Podcasts and rate, subscribe, and review. Phil, any other thoughts before we get out of here?
No, not really. Let's make it 5 in a row.
Let's keep it going. See sells your balloons, everybody. Yep.